the sacred Jedi texts.
A pile of old books.
Star Wars Sessions Book Club.
Greetings, Exalted Ones, and welcome to the latest episode of Star Wars Sessions Book Club. My name is Matt Hudson, aka Jabba the Hutt, and I do like a Star Wars book. And tonight's episode is a fun one because I was joined by John Jackson Miller, the author of the very soon to be released The Living Force novel. This is a big boy novel, 432 pages, and it focuses on the Jedi High Council in the year prior to The Phantom Menace, pre-prequels, baby. And it's got all the characters you know and love, Mace, Yoda, Qui-Gon, plus all the other ones on the council you might not know too much about. And it centres around them going on an adventure, shall we say. That's all I'll say. They go on an adventure. But the discussion is non-spoiler, by the way. If you haven't read the book or haven't had a chance to yet, it is non-spoiler. And it was great talking to John. He's a fantastic author who, of course, wrote the wonderful Kenobi novel way back when, has contributed many stories to Knights of the Old Republic and to the comics of old, and has also written A New Dawn, given stories to From a Certain Point of View and the Canto Bight anthology in the Journey to the Last Jedi line from a few years ago now. So it was great to pick up with John and talk books, and I'd love to know what you think about The Living Force. When you get a chance to read it or listen to it, do let me know what you think about it. Search for Star Wars Sessions across all the social media. Go to starwarssessions.co.uk or email us at hello@starwarssessions.co.uk and let me know what you thought about the book. But without any further, here is my interview with John Jackson Miller, author of The Living Force. Hello there, everyone, and welcome back to Star Wars Sessions. And tonight, I'm delighted to be joined by John Jackson Miller, the author of Kenobi, A New Dawn, so much Knights of the Old Republic content, and the very soon to be released The Living Force. John, thank you for joining. How are you doing?
I'm very good. How are you?
Bob, great, thank you. I'm very glad to be having this chat with you tonight, and I'm pleased to see you back and continuing in the Star Wars fold as well. You've been around the block for a long time in Star Wars.
Quite a bit, yeah. I did comics and short stories and novels for about 10 or 12 years. Last 8 years, I have been doing a number of Star Trek novels and some stuff for other franchises like Battlestar Galactica and some video games. But I have kept my hand in during all that time doing short stories for Star Wars, a novella for Star Wars Canto Bight for the Episode 8. And then I did a comic book for IDW for their Star Wars Adventures line. So we were just looking for a realistic place for me to get back in.
And we're glad that you are back in. You've returned to Star Wars long-form novels, like you say, after about a decade now since A New Dawn. How easy was it to get back into the swing of the Jedi and the Force and dealing with all of that?
You know, it was a lot easier than I thought. I have been more or less writing nonstop here for the last, 5 years, 6 years. I was familiar, of course, with the Jedi Council. I was familiar with The Phantom Menace, which this book takes place 1 year before. There was a little bit of getting up to speed in terms of exactly who was on the council and exactly what was officially known about them, because, of course, there have been stories about them, both from legends and currently. But once I had all that sifted through, it was very quick to start.
Yeah, the timeline you just mentioned, obviously coming from Legends background into the new canon, it's so vast now and it's ever-growing. It covers so many eras, including the more recent High Republic era, which I know, again, this will be spoiler-free, guys, but The Living Force, there's some High Republic goodness going on in there somewhere. But what is it, though, about the prequel era that stands out to you? Because for the longest time, it seemed like this era was looked down upon by a lot of people, and now the Renaissance is real and it's here to stay. So, you know, why the prequel era?
Well, it's one of those things where I think people embrace what was on when they were younger. And so now we're 25 years on. So that's happening. In my case, I had never written anything for the prequel era. I had done everything either for the far distant past or occasionally things that were you know, hugging the movies, like the Kenobi novel, which was right after episode 3. And then some stories later on, and it was a good chance to actually get back in there and talk about this time where the Jedi are in decline, but they're not entirely sure that they are yet. You know, they are not aware of the Emperor's machinations, but they are aware that things are not as good as they were before. Things are not as good as they were during the High Republic era. All of their, high ambitions and their great projects that they did, some of them are starting to come to ruin. And that is what happens in The Living Force, is they discover that this one planet, which was a project for them 200 years ago, is going wrong because of neglect and the absence of the Jedi, which is not something that has been done purposefully, but it's just come about over the course of them having their their responsibilities stretched and being pushed around by the Senate and the Republic and the Emperor, later Emperor.
You can see how this is going to lead into The Phantom Menace. Now, everyone listening, you can see where we're going with this. But with The Living Force, and this is a big boy. It's a big book, 432 pages. It's a tome, but it's absolutely well worth everybody's time. How did you go about structuring this story then compared to the other ones you've written, whether that's short form, obviously, or your longer ones? And there's a map in this one, isn't there? What made you put a map in there, John?
Well, there's a couple of questions there. You know, the first one about everybody. I mean, this is actually, both of these are things that I kind of got prepared to do while writing Star Trek. I've done a number of Star Trek stories with sprawling casts. I did a trilogy called Prey for the 50th anniversary. I just did the first Strange New Worlds novel called The High Country, and that book both covered multiple groups of characters on one planet, and I was having to structure the book so I could hop around and go see them, and then of course I was able to put my maps in the book. And you know, what's kind of fun about that is, you know, the new German edition is out, and they actually have the map on the sprayed on the corner of the edges of the pages, which is really cool.
That's gorgeous.
Yeah, it is. I wish all the copies were like that. But these were things that I knew how to do and I was accustomed to. So when it came time to do The Living Force, I knew that I had 12 Jedi Masters on the council, plus Qui-Gon, plus Obi-Wan, plus a villain that I needed to give time to. And I determined that the way to do that and not give anybody short shrift, to give everybody something to do and a significant number of pages each, was I sort of divided up their stories. I put them, some were traveling on the planet solo, some were traveling in pairs, going back and forth to the various places. And then there were the story arcs that took place in space. And then what I did was I really kind of sat down with a spreadsheet and I said, okay, well, here's what I'm going to do. We'll be in space. Then we'll go to the planet. We'll be in space. Then we'll go to the planet. Then we'll be in space. Then we'll go to the planet. And we will hit every one of these stories, in sequence, such that people don't forget what was going on in them. If there's a case where I want a character to, you know, feel like he's in the middle of a big job that is, you know, endless, as happens with Eeth Koth in this story, we're able to go away from him for several chapters at a time, and it feels natural when we come back to him, because we look at it and say, okay, yeah, he's been buried under work all this time, and oh, now here he is. So yes, I was able to structure that way. And then because I knew where everybody was, I had a, you know, a dry erase board with magnets and index cards, and I was moving these islands around on the map. And I finally determined, okay, this is the way I want this thing to look. I offered to provide maps for the book, or at least a big map for the book. And the folks at Random House said yes. And that's my editor, Tom Holler, and also the staff at Lucasfilm. So that, I think, really worked out well.
It worked out well for me, because what I found with some of the new canon, like the High Republic, which I'm really enjoying, is when you've got a deluge of new places, new people, trying to kind of picture them or put them in your mind's eye can be quite tough. So whereas the Living Force is dealing with the entirety of the council, Jedi High Council at that time, we're on a new planet, we're going to different places. I did find it quite fun to be able to kind of flick back, check the map, be able to kind of visualize where people were. It really did help me out. And to the book's credit as well, you are dealing with a big cast, like you mentioned, and to be able to give everybody their time in the sun without feeling like we're giving short shrift or we're giving too much attention to, you know, what people would say is the 80, your Maces, your Yodas, Obi-Wan, for example, Qui-Gon, sorry. But I think that was an exceptionally well-handled task you did there. And if somebody like me doesn't feel lost, you guys out there will be fine. But
I don't know any better way. I don't know any better way to do it.
Well, it worked. I'm going to keep doing that. How did you? Which member of the council, sorry, were you most excited to explore? Because obviously, we've seen so many of the bigger names in other aspects of canon, or in the Clone Wars or prequels themselves. You know, which one were you most excited to explore? Was it one of the big names, or was it one of the kind of lesser known members which you could flesh out?
I think I had the most fun with the characters that there was the least known about. You have a character like Uriel Poof, who has never officially spoken before. I was able to kind of come up with a characterization for him and then play that off of what we knew, what little we knew, for some other characters, Apo Rancisis, Ki-Adi Mundi, and some of the others. So I have that dynamic going, but then some of the better known characters, I had never written Yoda before. So that was obviously fun. Mace Windu, that was a case where, I was, initially, not certain that I could give him something very important to do and, that would meet his stature. And then I realized, okay, I want to do this whole arc, basically about the birth of the Republic Navy, or at least some element of it. And I wanted to put him up against a character that I had actually already created for another one of those short stories that I did, where he would be, facing off against a ship captain that wants nothing to do with the Jedi being on his bridge, because it's bad for discipline. It's bad for morale. It's bad for getting anything done, because, they're not in charge here. What's this about? They end up having what I think is one of the richer, arcs of the book, not simply in terms of generating lore, which is not what this book is about, but in tussling with, an issue that I've dealt with going all the way back to the Knights of the Old Republic days, which is, sort of this, fraught relationship between the Republic and the Jedi, and the Republic military and the Jedi. And, we got that in issues of Knights of the Old Republic with Admiral Carath and Captain Morvis dealing with Zane Carrick.
Yeah.
And what is soon to be, of course, in that part of the timeline is, you've got the Jedi Civil War and Revan and Malak flying around, you're commandeering ships left and right. So, it's something where I felt that I could bring something to that story, and Mace was the best person to have there.
Just seeing you and listening to you, I can see just how excited you are to talk about Star Wars. Going back to the KOTOR days and talking about this story, putting that into your story, did you find any challenges in writing this story, whether it was that many characters? Was there any pushback on anything you wanted to write for those characters?
You know, we had full cooperation from everybody involved. I mean, everybody's trying to make the best, book possible. You know, I tried to look for opportunities to do some interesting things. We brought one character from the movies in who was a bit of a surprise. I made the case that this is a character who very likely would have been both, you know, at the proper age at this time, but also, you know, him being in the setting that he is sort of underscores and sells the value of, you know, the person he's working for in this arc. And you know, it seemed right to me, and you know, that went up to Lucasfilm, and they said, yeah, we're here for it. That works. And so, you know, I try not to do anything that is going to be controversial or difficult to do. Having done this for many years, my job is not to you know, connect the dots, but it's to tell stories. But if there's a place where things do work out, you know, I can make the case to you know, the licensor that it would make sense to do something. Then we'll go ahead and talk about it.
Yeah, but my canon loving heart is singing just at the idea of just being able to bring in people from the films. And I know you're not connecting the dots per se, but I do like it when you get characters who, like, so you don't really know much about, but or in some cases you do, but you can just flesh them out a little bit more. But two of the characters that the Living Force revisits, of course, and the bond between is Qui-Gon and Obi-Wan. Why do you think their relationship specifically is so special to the Star Wars community? Because they, you know, since The Phantom Menace, those two particularly, people have gravitated to them since day one.
Well, obviously they're good performances, you know, by, you know, Liam Neeson and Ewan McGregor, and and people already had a connection to Obi-Wan Kenobi before any of it even started. But I think also in their dynamic, they represent not polar opposites, but different approaches to being a Jedi. And of course, you know, the first line in the book is Qui-Gon, you know, telling Obi-Wan, it's a quote from Phantom Menace, that he should be mindful of the Living Force. And again, that, you know, ties into a major theme of the book, which is to care about more than just what is, you know, the Jedi deemed to be the most important thing, you know, for the galaxy or for destiny or anything else at the moment. But to actually get out and meet individual people and help individual people. You know, we see that tension a little bit between them in Phantom Menace when it comes to Jar Jar, when it comes to, you know, picking up, you know, useless life forms. You know, it's going to take a Qui-Gon Jinn to recognize an Anakin Skywalker. It takes a Qui-Gon Jinn to, you know, kind of see, as he does, I think, in this book, the council's mistake, which is allowing itself to be so bogged down in bureaucracy and, you know, the machinations of the Republic, that they are no longer, you know, connecting with the people. And, you know, it is a Jedi order that does not connect with the people, that is a Jedi order that can easily be turned against.
And we know how that story ends up. Only a few decades down the line in the canon itself. But how long have you been sitting on this story then? Is this one that you've been wanting to write for a long time? Because I know, obviously, as any author, when it was, you know, greenlit and it's announced, you're over the moon. But, you know, what was the process in you actually sitting down and fleshing this out before pitching it?
It did not exist in any format beforehand. I was asked to you know, if I was interested in writing a Jedi Council novel. And the very first thing I said was, I want Qui-Gon to walk into the Jedi Council chamber and call them out and challenge them. Yeah. And, you know, that I didn't even think twice. And it is not that I had that moment in mind all that time, but I knew that that's what they needed. And I knew that would be a much better impetus to drive the story than just having them all go to some diplomatic retreat or something like that and have, you know, chaos break loose. I wanted to do something that would impact each of the members of the council personally. He, by making a personal challenge to them, makes it personal.
Yeah. What is it then about this book that you think fans will love the most? Because again, the prequels, they're growing and growing and growing a reputation. People love them. What is it about this story, The Living Force, that fans will love?
I think that people generally appreciate about all my books the fact that I kind of embrace Star Wars and also Star Trek and also the other universes I work in as lived-in universes that have regular people and where, you know, we get to see, you know, the views of the regular people of these titans that are wandering through. Obviously, the Kenobi novel is 90% told from the point of view of the regular people. Here is a case where we have a crowd, a literal crowd of Jedi, not regular at all. And in fact, they're beyond regular Jedi. They're the top of the line. And I figured that, you know, really the only way to, get into their dynamics was to surround themselves with regular people in the story, and then also to show how they interacted with one another. And I think one of the things that people are likely to enjoy is the fact that these relationships, as we see in this book, did not just start this week. The characters have known each other for years or centuries in some cases. And so the repartee that's going on, the pranks that we see in some cases, the joking, the irritation, these are arguments or tiffs that have been going on for 10, 20, 100, 200 years in some cases. There's a joke that's on the back cover where, Qui-Gon says, "I'm not here to question this body's great wisdom or to challenge the way things are done." And Yoda says, "But you are, you, Qui-Gon, we have met before." Because they all know him.
That's a great impression.
Well, it's not. That's what my voice sounds like. This is my last podcast before the book release, actually. And so this is what my voice is down to. You, Qui-Gon, we have met before. There's also a line from somebody else saying, "Yeah, this is classic Qui-Gon. This is, we've heard this before." They all have that going on. They've all been in meetings with one another since time immemorial. And, I think that people will enjoy the fact that this book has, provided a snapshot of a few days in these people's lives as they interact with one another and other people.
But so many Jedi guys. I think everybody out there is going to dig this book. I hope they enjoy it as much as I did. You mentioned Kenobi. That was one of my first Star Wars books I read. I loved it. I know my brother adores it. Why are these additional stories, so the EU, Expanded Universe, are now canon, you know, why are they so important to the Star Wars universe as a whole?
Well, I mean, yeah, the stories still exist. The stories, you know, are there to provide entertainment and inspiration in some cases. What I like about the TV show is that they didn't overwrite the novel. In fact, yeah, Ewan McGregor and Deborah Chow both read the book. They talk about it in videos that are on my website on the Kenobi page, where, you know, there was no way they could do the book as the show because it's an arrival story. It's set, you know, it would have been better to make in 2005 or 2006, which is actually when I came up with the idea. It's something where the feeling of the book was able to inform the show, and in even one element from the book, I believe does directly inform the show. And that's the Qui-Gon has not responded to Obi-Wan through the meditation. Yeah, these things, they're there to provide, background, certainly planets, species, all sorts of other things. You know, we did not completely start everything, you know, anew. But I draw upon these things. I mean, there are there's an element right on the map that comes directly from Knights of the Old Republic comics. And you know, people are going to have to go look that up. You know, there's a few things like that where I, you know, I pulled things that, why invent something else? If yeah. you know that something exists and you can use it.
You've covered, we've mentioned KOTOR so much, and then the short stories from the sequels and the Canto Bight novella, like, as you mentioned, A New Dawn. So in and around the Rebels time and now, pre Phantom Menace, is there an era of Star Wars or maybe a specific character you'd like to focus on if you decided to write more Star Wars content?
You know, I'm open to anything. I can say at this point, the only movie characters from the original trilogy I have not written would be Chewie, Han, and Lando. I only got to do very little with Luke and Leia.
Yeah.
I've only gotten to do very little with Luke and Leia. I did one comic book with them and the droids. But no, for the most part, the vast majority of what I've done has been in the distant past or other times. Again, you know, I'm somebody who, you know, I look at whatever I'm asked to do and I try to find what I think is interesting in it and try to find the challenge there.
Good answer, John. Right, two quick fire questions now. I can't let you go without asking. Do you have a favorite Star Wars book, and who is your favorite Star Wars character?
You know, I was really happy when Marvel and before that Dark Horse was reprinting all of the original Marvel Star Wars comics.
Yeah.
Because, you know, certainly, you know, I'm a fan of the novels and, you know, I don't want to play favorites there with the various authors. But, you know, it was the Marvel comics in the 70s and 80s that got me started reading. You know, Star Wars number one was my first grown-up comic book. And so being able to go back and refer to that, you know, a lot of what is in Knights of the Old Republic, you know, there are some sequences that are directly inspired by the work of Archie Goodwin and David Michelinie and Joe Duffy in that long series that was done. So yes, I do go back and look at that stuff on a fairly regular basis. You know, I go back to Splinter of the Mind's Eye. You know, it's my very first Star Wars novel that was not the adaptation. So I've been around since the start.
It's experience. That's all it is, John. Favorite Star Wars character, though?
Oh, favorite character. It would be fun to write Lando simply because I tend to write a good, not necessarily a scoundrel, but somebody who's working both sides of a deal, or yeah. You know, I like that character type. But again, I've also kind of done that in that I did, I had the Griff character who is in Knights of the Old Republic, who is very much a schemer, coming up with various ways of doing things, and then, you know, I'm able to find ways to. You know, even though I haven't written Han Solo, I've written Cristobal Rios in my Picard novel, which was called Rogue Elements. And he's very much the Star Trek Han Solo in a sense, except he smokes more, he drinks more, and he has a more active social life. But again, that was a case where the Federation is barely in that book because it's sort of in the lawless regions that it takes place. And, you know, that had a very, you know, Han Solo, Brian Daly novel feel to it for me.
Well, we could be seeing a Lando book from John Jackson Miller or Han Solo one day, but that's me saying that. Nobody else got, by the way, if Disney were listening. To end off then, John, this is, it might be tough, it might be easy. Can you describe the Living Force in one word to leave our listeners with a real hunger to go out and read or listen to it?
The book, or not the, I thought you were saying the Living Force itself.
The book, yeah.
Vacation.
Ooh, vacation, guys. Well, there we go.
Vacation. It is. It is. It is spring break for the Jedi. It is a journey for them. It is a trip for them, and I feel that it really is a vacation from the readers because there are big issues that happen in the book, but it is a fun book, and I feel that people are going to enjoy this particular trip.
I can attest to that. I do think that Random House have dropped the ball by not marketing it as spring break for the Jedi, but who am I to say what they do?
Well, it's not spring in Australia, so we can't do everything for everybody at once. So.
What better truth to end it on then?
Yeah, so it's spring here, but not everywhere we publish. So it's a vacation read, is what I would say.
That's more like it then. That's what we'll go with that then. It comes out on April the 9th, 2024. By the time you listen to this, it might be out depending on when you listen to it, but it's dropping within the next few hours for you. I highly recommend you go out and grab it. It, like I say, 432 pages. Get your flip-flops on or your vacation clothes. Sit back and read and enjoy the Jedi High Council in the year before The Phantom Menace. And I don't think you'll regret it. So, John, thank you for writing the book, firstly. And thank you so much for coming on and giving your time and sharing your thoughts.
You're welcome. I've enjoyed it.
No worries. Thank you. John Jackson Miller, everyone. Thank you.